see the names have all changed since I've been around. But the game ain't the same since I left out. Welcome back. 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 You know you like that? Yeah. We're back in our studio.
We are back.
Hey guys, in case you're wondering, you're not in the wrong place. This is the Tech Point Africa podcast. We're just happy we're back in our studio.
Yeah. We're happy.
No more poor sound. I'm sure you guys noticed all this past week. We've been apologizing. But we're back in our studio.
Yay.
Even though it's temporary. But at least we thought we should just give you a little bit of that studio feeling, you know?
Yeah.
It celebrates all the good times we've had together. Thank you for listening all this way. My name is Muiwa.
My name is Oluwani Femi.
And I'm Emmanuel.
So how are we doing? I always ask that. How has this been? The whole of the federal government lifted the lockdown. Was it this week or last week? I've lost track of time.
It was last week.
Oh, it was last week. Yeah. Okay, so this is the second week of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And of course, there's still the curfew, 8 p.m. or whatever.
Yeah, very weird. I don't
traffic
understand.
Traffic has been crazy. Because everybody is now leaving earlier.
Yeah.
You know, to get home on time. Well, yeah. I mean, and the numbers keep increasing.
Yeah.
Although at a slower rate now.
Yes, and the recovery rate too. The number of recovered patients has increased too.
What some people are asking is it that maybe they, because people can't fathom the fact that more people are moving around now, and you're saying the cases are reducing. Are they testing less people now than they were testing before, or what?
Or maybe they've not started testing the people that
have been moving around.
Yeah, they've not started.
Because they've not started feeling symptoms.
No.
Oh, yes. And because of the incubation period. Oh. So let's go. Let's
2 weeks.
Next week, we'll start seeing the numbers. Yeah.
what is
really, really painful now is the amount that we pay for transport. I need to pay for transport. Everything is
that
doubling.
That one has been, doubling. In fact,
because of the spacing and whatever.
Yes, some of them follow the spacing. Some don't.
Some don't. And they still charge double the amount.
Yes.
That is crazy. And so it's just, I mean, all over the world, I think in Germany now, they are kind of like easing off the lockdown. They are even about to reopen their football league.
Yes.
Did you guys see that Twitter thread?
Oh my God.
Where Premiership English Premiership fans should follow the 20 reasons why they should follow the league for all the 20 teams.
That was
very smooth.
Most countries are getting back to their lives now.
Yeah. Wow. Dubai too is like supposedly free, coronavirus free. Madagascar
with their weird cure. I'm sorry.
Yeah. But actually, the Federal Minister of Nigeria has taken a sample. Has taken of delivery of a sample.
Cure.
Yeah, they're going to, no, the sample, they're going to analyze it. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so we have a lab.
Yeah.
Of course we do. Where do you think the test will be happening? Where do you think the test will be happening? Wow. Yes, we have a lab, of course.
Well, yes. Hopefully labs, not just a lab.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, there are state labs and all of that. And there, of course, private labs too and all of that.
Okay. I hope that works for Nigeria.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like right now it's like the government is a bit... if it was like in the US where we know it's election year in November, this is election year in the US... They were like, oh, maybe they are trying to play politics. But I mean, Nigerian government has been
doing fairly well. That they've not been really open to us. Well,
yeah, transparency.
Yeah, transparency.
Yeah, we very poor that.
I was in a bus earlier today and the driver was talking about how there's no coronavirus case in Nigeria. Like, all what he was saying was filled with distrust for the government.
We don't trust our governments actually. We don't. I can't blame anybody.
Yeah, yes. Another one was saying that just using this to make money. Like,
I won't put it away. With the history and precedents, it doesn't sound far fetched.
Really?
Doesn't sound far fetched.
And when things start getting better, we feel this is too unreal for Nigeria. It's not possible.
Yeah. But I think the major thing is everywhere around the world, everybody's like, okay, this virus is going to be around for a while.
Yes.
Let's just get on with our lives, man.
Moving about.
Let's just start moving around.
I felt a kind of apprehension when it was going to be relaxed. last week.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, how will I go ahead with my life? But I think 1 week gone now, I think I'm getting back to it. Shape. Yes.
I mean, once schools and churches and other gatherings open, maybe we'll know that. That will take a while. That one will take a while, Sha. I think for a while we'll still not have any of those. But I mean, like I said, government seems to be doing well. And not just that area, there's good news for people from Ekiti State that was announced yesterday.
Yes. The Ekiti State government, they've gone ahead to implement federal government's order on how much telcos and ISPs, that is internet service providers, have to pay for a meter of
cable. Those cables that they dig.
That
people are thinking is 5G.
Yeah, so those are what they dig. So they have to pay per meter for every cable they lay. Now it has been reduced from 4,500 naira, which is like roughly $11
per meter.
Per meter to 145 naira,
which is the standard rate.
Standard rate. Okay, of course it looks like a very steep reduction, but that's the way it has been expected to be since the federal government ordered it.
And that was from the old broadband plan, if I'm not mistaken. The 2013 to 2018 national broadband plan. That was when that was suggested.
Yes. Yeah. But there was another, the telcos raised it again earlier in this year in January, that some states are not following the order.
They've never. A lot of the state governments, they don't see the big picture. Hmm. So they're like, they see these providers like money machines, right? And they say, okay, business. If you guys are going to come and dig cable in our states, you have to pay.
They don't see the bigger picture.
Yeah, they don't see that, okay, if you can enable a solid internet market here, broadband, businesses are going to thrive. They are going to pay.
Exactly.
And they are going to pay these telcos for the internet service. And the taxes that will come from that eventually.
Yes, that's what actually is in the view of this of the state governor government. Like, if we allow this to happen, more businesses to come, especially innovative businesses.
Yeah.
If you remember, I think last TechPoint store to Akure.
Yeah.
Yes. So we were able to discover some.
That was 2 years ago.
Years ago, like a year later, that some of these innovations are actually migrating to other states.
Yeah,
like
they're moving Lagos to Ibadan and Lagos
of internet connectivity. So this, if the government sees like the bigger picture of who is going to be who it will benefit, and how it will also benefit the state, most states will actually keen to this and reduce because a lot of places will be reached. Yes, because some of the founders I spoke with when I was writing that article of internet connectivity in Akure said they tried a lot of places, a lot of areas that can be CBDs in the state.
Central business district. Yes,
but there's no internet connectivity there.
And don't forget one thing. Another thing is, for many of these telcos, they are businesses, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the reason why a Lagos state, for example, or many places in Lagos, many areas in Lagos will have broadband, it makes economic sense for these telcos. There are businesses around there.
Yeah,
so if they dig their cables there, they know that there will be customers for them to, pay. But, and so they don't mind the cost. Don't forget that in a lot of these places that they've dug cables in Lagos, they had to pay the very high right-of-way fees.
Yes.
But they didn't mind it because they knew they would make their return on investment. Mm-hmm. Only a few places like Yaba, CCOB, Sabo, where CCOB with the Lagos state government, when Fashola was the governor, that was 2014 or 13. Yeah. So they collaborated with Lagos states and been one to waive right-of-way charges along that stretch. That's Sabo, Yaba, that whole couple of, I think about 11 kilometers, right? And that's why Mainwon was a bit, and that's how that place became a sort of hub. Although now things have changed. A lot of startups are moving, even TechPoint moved away from there. But that was, a few other places where you see all these providers digging in Lagos, it's because they don't mind the cost, because they can make their money back. But in a place like Ekiti where you need to, there needs to be incentives for
attract. Yeah.
They don't see the point of that. So this is good news.
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Government reducing that's about 96% reduction.
Reduction.
In right-of-way charges. It should be free anyway, to be honest. It should be free. They should make their returns back in taxes. I mean, look at what Ogun State did 2 years ago. Ogun State with 250 kilometers.
That's a lot
of fiber for main one, but it was just for just one for telco. That was probably on the part of main one.
Yeah.
Discussing with the government, it was not like all telcos, but I mean that's a big deal. And in return, they give 30 years of free internet to the Ogun State government secretariat. Yeah. So I mean, I would like to see other states follow through.
So looking at the bigger picture now, Nigeria has a broadband plan from the 2013 plan, which that ended in 2018. They have a new broadband plan for 2020. They are targeting.
We didn't even finish implementing the last one.
We didn't finish. So it appears this new broadband plan will still face the same issues as the previous one. So the right of way charges that AKT just dropped now for just one state.
Yeah.
Ogun State does perform in one. So what about the 34 other states?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to achieve 70% broadband penetration by 2025?
If these states don't follow that directive to either waive right of way charges or reduce it like AKT has done.
And it's just funny. Like I don't understand what the federal government is doing to actually make the state government cooperate. Is there what kind of bureaucracy that can be
It's political will. I guess maybe to be honest, I don't know. I mean, we did a couple of stories. We could link to those in the episode notes about why it's so difficult. We've written extensively about it. We had sometimes one of the issues is bureaucracy.
Yeah.
So you know, the state governments not wanting to follow the directive of the federal government, and all of that.
They don't know what they are going through.
Mm-hmm. So there are a few other issues. I'm trying to refresh my memory now. I can check. Let me check. I know we did a lot of stories about that, and there are so many issues, like you said. There was time we spoke with Benga Sheson, one of the stakeholders who drafted the original broadband plan. So he has insight into how it's supposed to work and why it didn't work. And he told us a lot of things that made us realize how difficult it is, how really difficult it is. And so Benga Sheson, I remember he listed a couple of things like policies and regulations, lack of accountability, right of way charges, like you already pointed out, which is a serious issue. And there are a few other things. There's licensing also, you know, the InfraCo. So there's what they call the InfraCo, that's infrastructure company. So, you know, when a main one, for example, says they have cables landing at the coast at the Atlantic Lagos, Ocean, right? And it's easy for them to spread it into Lagos. But how about other states? So, do they have to start building infrastructure for a Bauchi or a Borno? Why can't telcos share this infrastructure? That's what the InfraCo was supposed to be about.
Instead of each telco or each ISP
taking
care of their own infrastructure,
exactly,
they should be sharing.
Sharing infrastructure.
Nice.
So that was what InfraCo was supposed to address, but it was never really implemented. I mean, some telcos already do share infrastructure, but we're talking about nationwide spread.
Yeah.
To take broadband, to achieve that 70% we're talking about, it's going to take a lot.
I don't get maybe we're yet to see the broader picture of this. Like, it's not really about government.
Mm-hmm.
It's about people and the improvement it can bring to a location. We don't just sit and just say by this year, so year, it wants to reach this percentage of penetration without doing anything about it.
Exactly.
I don't get the idea behind it. Is it because it's in the SDG or because a country is doing it? I just don't understand, because you can't just say put a target and not do anything concerning it.
So yeah, I remember a speaker at a IHS conference I attended last year. I don't know, I've not been able to verify it, but it's not unlikely. He said it's cheaper to actually get a cable from France or Portugal, wherever they get the cable from, Europe, to Lagos, than to actually get it from Lagos to say another
somewhere in the north.
In the north. So
wow.
Yes,
it's much cheaper to actually cross the ocean than to enter
Nigeria. Within last mile, to do last mile delivery. Yeah.
Wow.
And it's because of these issues we're saying, right of way, InfraCo, all of that. Anyway, I mean, it's a good step by the state governments.
Yes.
They didn't pay us to say this, but I think Ogun State did what it did. Now Ekiti State, Lagos State started with that small thing they did for the Yaba. What do you call the Yaba Valley? And then Ogun State followed, and now Ekiti has followed all in the southwest. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, still talking about governments. Uganda is doing something interesting.
Okay, so when I saw this story, I was actually surprised. They are bringing commercial motorcycles under e-hailing companies like Save Border. Save Border is like the OPE of Uganda. So OPE, Gukada of Uganda, rather. So yeah, so Save Border, Uber. I think Uber has a commercial motorcycle service. Bolt has a commercial motorcycle service in Uganda.
Uber Boda, I think.
Yeah,
I think
Uber,
it's called Uber Boda.
So the three of them will now be incorporating commercial motorcycles and even taxis under e-hailing companies in Uganda.
Oh, so like, are they saying, is the Uganda government forcing these e-hailing companies to take these commercial motorcycles under their umbrella?
No, it's okay. It sounds that way, in a way. But actually, they are saying these guys should get registered. The Boda guys, the commercial motorcycle riders. So, and they're saying if they want to be registered, they should register under these digital companies.
Is that not the same? That's the same. When Lagos State banned commercial motorcycles, Okada and KKs, wasn't it one of the ways people were refuting the ban, or how the ban didn't make sense?
Yeah.
Was that these guys, they are banning, like, okay, if you are banning the Okadas, why are you banning the Gokadas, the O-Rides?
Yeah.
And the what's the other one?
Yeah.
They already have like some ways that they verify their riders. They already have systems.
Yeah.
So why are you banning? Why are you doing a blanket ban? Why not just put these Okada guys under these
under
people?
These guys.
Exactly. That's what Uganda is doing now.
Yes. When I saw the news, I was like, wow. Seriously, because in a way, those tech companies, they will be grateful. They will be willing to pay tax. These taxes you are forcing, like Nigerian government, Lagos State government is forcing on these tech companies. Those people, they don't have to be forced.
Yeah.
Because in a way, I can't really point the figures of borders in the state now. If not spread it across those tech companies, they don't need to.
Yeah, it's about 200,000.
Imagine. So your profit is, your revenue is coming in. In a way, so you can't be forced to say pay taxes before you pay it. And for the fact that the government is involved, there is no how those people will not comply.
Yeah.
Whether they revolt against it or not, they will still comply.
Yeah.
So, like, it's just contrasting to the step Lagos State government took.
I know what is most annoying now. The fact that, okay, with the whole isolation, whatever,
social
distancing that is going on now, they say we can move around, but it's coffee of 8 p.m. Those bikes would have been the best way.
The best.
I tell you, it's crossed my mind.
Because sitting in those buses that are cramped, even with the spacing, it's still not. There's not enough distance. But with a bike, you're on your own.
Yes.
Just the person, the rider. And you wear your mask.
What is even worse for those buses? You start rushing for the bus. That's what you do at the bus stop. Just because there are few spaces left now, just three persons or two persons in the bus, or keke, just two persons. So one keke comes 45 minutes.
Takes only two people.
So any keke that comes is always fights.
So those bikes would have been perfect right now.
Perfect.
And they're banned.
Seriously. Yes,
no, is Uganda government anything to radio?
No, they're not. It's still a proposal, and I don't think for now it doesn't seem like the existing traditional guys, they have their own association. You know, the way we have our NURTW there, it doesn't seem like they bite into the idea so much. So the space is very, very unregulated, and it seems okay. These companies have this, they have due diligence on each driver. They know, okay, this is the profile of the driver, and this is what he's capable of. This is where he's from. He has his driver's license and all, has all his documents. But for all those commercial motorcycles, they could come from anywhere and start riding. So, but if they're trying to tackle security issues, if they're trying to track accident rates, you can do it better with these digital companies.
With these guys,
but on the other side, you are looking at it, okay, how many of them actually are actually literate enough to use the apps?
This was something I noticed when Lagos State, during Eco Cab saga, those drivers said most of them use Android phones.
Yeah, most
so
of them.
It is very easy. I think it's very easy for them to transition into using just an app. I don't think it should be very hard for them. Some of them mentioned that if they can be enlightened on how to do it, they will. So the internet using, I don't think it's hard, because even OPE, I think OPE gives its riders, I don't know how to pronounce it, who are we?
Huawei.
Yeah. Huawei 100 phones. Yes. When they onboard them. So it's a way of just getting people to transition quickly into that. I don't think it's something to really worry about.
Yeah. But the mayor of Uganda, not Uganda, what the capital of Uganda?
Kampala.
So the mayor of Kampala was actually saying that.
Oh, they use mayoral system.
The Lord Mayor of Kampala. So he was saying, okay, the federal government of Uganda did not consult them before bringing this proposal into play.
Oh.
And
welcome to Africa.
And he's saying this proposal might actually affect the revenue of these guys. Like, you want to remove borders from the streets, or you want to remove taxi operators from the streets. They have their own associations. You need to come and consult them. And I don't know how Uganda's steering is, though, but if you are bringing it here, man. Nigeria, coming to negotiate with our traditional...
well.
So, but it's nice on its way, but it doesn't seem like something that will be implemented seamlessly. There's going to definitely be...
Actually, they put a date is put on it, like 42 days after lockdown has been lifted.
Mm. Is when they're going to implement that.
Yeah. And 42 days is used for them to quickly onboard wherever you want to join. Do that.
Go and register with anybody.
But even for the e-hailing platforms, it's going to be a lot of stress.
Yeah.
Training all those guys, having more people on board than maybe you were willing to manage. Mm. So it's not going to be seamless, like you say. I doubt it's going to be seamless.
Maybe
now
more,
that I think of it.
Maybe more will come up. More
ride-hailing companies.
To take up the rest of the ones that the current ones cannot handle.
In a way, new market is being disrupted. Like,
I mean, they only need to get bike, acquire bikes and all of that.
No.
Just bring them on
board.
Mm. But normally, these ride-hailing companies, they have safety requirements for their bike. Like, most of these commercial bikes, they are, say, 125 engine capacity. But mostly the ride-hailing guys, they like to use like 200.
Over 200,
and above. So I don't know how that will work, because those bikes, they look like something. If you are riding on high speed, you look like you might fly off sometimes.
Or breeze just. A truck just passes and just blazes off the road.
So I think now, since it's the unions that are complaining, since the ride-hailing are not complaining, I think they are ready for it. They will find a way to accommodate them all.
Yeah.
Or maybe get new bikes if they use customized bikes normally. Mm-hmm.
And like you said, some new startups will come up to take up the challenge, since there will be so many bikes. And that just reminds me of funding. They are going to need funding.
Mm.
And the Novastar Ventures, the Pan-Africa is a Pan-African venture capital. I mean, just this week announced raising $108 million.
Wow.
Wait, why?
Which they are going to use to invest in West African and East African startups.
As in, the way these figures fly around recently.
During this lockdown, a lot of these things have been happening before.
Yes,
conversations have been going on before.
Even with that, it's kind of bringing up we're not really broke. There is money somewhere. This is good news.
And of course, they addressed $80 million before. About 80 million and 92 million. So they now have like $200 million capital that they can use to invest in West African and East African startups. So some of these guys in Uganda that rise up may benefit from that. But that's some money. I mean, if you distribute that over 10 startups, that's 10 million, 20 million per startup.
Yeah.
20 startups will be $10 million per startup, $10 million. It's
nice. Okay, so this brings a question to mind, like the difference between venture capital platforms and angel investors. We all hear these terms in the startup ecosystem, and what do they actually mean?
So I mean, they are almost the same thing, just that an angel investor is an individual. So someone who has a lot of money and feels rather than putting it in my bank account or buying real estate, I want to put it in startups. So maybe I just left this high paying job. They gave me a severance package. They gave me like $10 million and I have $1 million to spare. I'm like, okay, let me just put $100,000 in 10 startups. Let's see how it comes out. You know, so an angel investor is an individual. He's taking all the risk on his or herself.
Know if the startup is profitable or not.
And they usually come in the early stage. Then the venture capitalist or a venture capital fund, a VC, is an institution. So usually what they do is they raise money from other sources, invest it. So for example, for a good example is a ventures platform in Nigeria or a Microtraction. That they do early stage investment. What they usually do, what they actually do is they raise money from, so Microtraction and Ventures platform, Microtraction especially, is affiliated with Y Combinator.
Okay.
So you notice that a lot of startups that Y Combinator and Microtraction investing ends up in Y Combinator. So they like raise money from foreign sources, like maybe Silicon Valley based sources, which they now invest. And I don't know enough to know what the arrangement is, but they will kind of be like, the interest, there's some way that it is shared or whatever. You get. So yeah, for Nova Star raising money, you know that VC pass VC.
They're
raising from somewhere. Sometimes they're raising from a fund, maybe a bank as a fund, or maybe, say for example, Dangote.
That won't necessarily want to put a Dangote fund startup.
Yeah, and then so because these guys have expertise, they understand how startups are. They give them the phone, and you guys help us invest it, something like that.
Wow,
I think that answers it.
Yeah, that answers my question, because I was wondering if startups are raising money, then.
And if I'm wrong, I want to hear anybody can correct me if I'm wrong. Anybody that's listening, please. We want to hear corrections. Anyway, so I mean, we're still talking about African startups and. It's good news for African startups.
Yeah,
it is.
West African and East African. That's their focus. West Africa and East Africa. That's Nova Star Ventures. They have $200 million to invest. Don't forget, they've already invested in startups like M-Pharma, Max, and the Max, Metro Africa Express, the Lagos-based. What do they do again? They're the logistics, mobility and logistics startup. And then M-Pharma, the health startup. So yeah. We'll be seeing. We expecting to see a couple more investments coming soon. Jumia. So Jumia released their
Q1 report.
Q1 report yesterday, right?
Yeah, they released it.
What can you tell us quickly about that?
Okay, so Jumia. Surprisingly, they had reduced losses. Surprisingly and encouragingly, their losses reduced for Q1 2020. It's the lowest they've had. I think by 10%. The lowest they've had. In the last 6 quarters.
The losses reduced by 10%.
Yes. The lowest they've had in the last 6 quarters. This is after they removed the fulfillment expense and all that. So
this probably has to do with all the assets they dropped.
They
shut down in Tanzania, Cameroon, a few other places that they shut down.
Yeah.
The e-commerce arm.
And they've been slimming down to focus on their key markets. And I think they also reduced a lot of promotional activities. So they're focusing a lot on business, and of course, a lot of people are, it seems more people are joining e-commerce platforms, purchasing items, mostly groceries. And
during this period,
period. And the effect of the lockdown was not too much, did not reflect too much on
I mean,
Q1.
The lockdown only started in March.
Yeah, anyway, towards the end of March. So, but even then, as the lockdown was approaching, as people's mind we're preparing for the lockdown because everybody suspected it, but it seems sales of essential
items. So even the shutting down of their warehouse in Lagos did not affect.
No, it didn't
take long before it was reopened.
It was reopened the next day.
Everything. And then of course, I'm sure Jumia paid. You know the way they are pivoting to, they're trying to gradually becoming a fintech.
Yeah, 71% increase in usage.
But you know that Jumia Pay thing is very is suspicious. So I don't know. I'm not sure. How many people really use Jumia Pay to pay? A lot of Nigerians, I'm talking, I don't know about other markets where they are, but I know that in Nigeria, a lot of people still pay on delivery.
Yeah.
Yes, or use card pay.
Yeah, so how are they, because don't forget sometimes if you, even on Jumia, you order something and there's a refund.
Yeah.
They usually refund you via Jumia Pay. Do they count that as a transaction?
Yes, they do.
They do. Yeah, they count that. Yeah, so that would inflate the numbers.
Yes, of course. The numbers are really inflated.
So
I was discussing with a developer. It seems they actually use methods like this to actually put users on the platform with or without their knowledge.
Without their knowledge. So people are Jumia Pay users without knowing that they're Jumia Pay users.
Most likely.
I Jumia has been doing this thing where, I mean, it's wise. It's what you should do if you... They control the narrative a lot.
Yeah.
So before, when they know that they are releasing their reports, they preempt the media. They come up with, oh yes, this happened, but this is the positive. They come so before you even find out the negative, they think, oh, this was some negatives, but oh, yes, this is positive. But you don't forget about that. Look at the positive. So anyway, you are going to do a deep dive into all of that later, right? So you guys can check it out. We'll publish it on the site. You look deeper into all of that. Let's not dwell on it too much.
Okay.
And then still talking about fintech, Jumia pivoting into fintech. Fintech fraud is a serious issue.
Yeah,
very serious big issue in Africa.
Very, very big.
Many startups don't talk about that thing. And we've tried to talk about it a couple times, but you know, if you don't have enough leads, it's very hard to. But there's a lot of fintech fraud going on. People are losing money. And then someone is saying they have a solution now to the problem.
His name is Abdulhamid Hassan. Yes. He's Abdulhamid Hassan. He was co-founder of Oyapay, now defunct Oyapay.
Oh, the same. Yeah, the same. Yeah.
He was also in PayStack. So he founded.
Oh, that is his new startup, right?
Voyance.
Voyance.
Yeah.
So I think we announced when he launched.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So they are developing a product. It's like a graph database that fintech companies can contribute. They flag, because all these fintech companies, of course, they have their own fraud detection teams we flag an identifier. Maybe this fraudster uses a BVN, he uses a phone number. Most of the time, these fraudsters, according to what I found, that they don't change. They will just attack company A and go to another company and attack that one with the same user information. So because company A and company B don't have shared information between themselves, this one can attack this and attack this, and they won't know anything. So with this platform, company A and company B can contribute, this guy has attacked us. So a different company entirely can also use that API. They can plug into that API and see if this person has actually been flagged by a different fintech company before.
As so a fraudulent.
So it's actually nice. And of course, it could also be used by loan companies, because people are serial borrowers.
And defaulters.
So they'll borrow from Carbon, borrow from Branch, borrow from Sokolon, Ocash. So, but with this platform, this fintech, these lending guys can actually upload information of chronic defaulters. So any other fintech that wants to check the background information, they can plug into the platform and see what's
something like a blacklist.
Yeah, a blacklist.
That's interesting.
Yes, yeah.
There's some other blacklist solution someone is building, right?
We've
not talked about it yet. But that's. But then is this being created in a vacuum? Because I imagine the regulatory body, CBN, has to have something to say about this.
Or
what are banks?
Regulation shares innovation in this country.
Okay, so this is like
you create first, then
they come on. So like Abdul was saying, it was like, okay, regulators don't have anything to do with this. It's just like an alliance between fintech companies. So the likes of Flutterwave, Kudi, I think they've made interesting comments.
PayStack, is PayStack there?
I've not seen PayStack. They said, okay, they don't want to announce the companies that are contributing.
All of them are struggling with this issue.
Yeah.
And there were rumors that a lot of them were using their VC funding, money they raised to pay back some of these monies they lost through fraud.
Wow.
Because if I'm a merchant, I'm using PayStack to collect or Flutterwaves, let it not be as if I'm singling out anybody, to collect money on my platform. And it turns out the person that paid was a fraud. And I don't want to hear from PayStack or Flutterwave that pay me my money. You know, so it's a serious issue for a lot of them. So if this solution can really solve that problem, help them to flag and identify fraudulent.
I don't know why. I'm trying to understand why they would have they kept quiet for this long. Is it that to keep their image?
You
can't control the PR from the fallout of that. If it comes out, you can't. You just can't.
Yeah. If one of them announces,
and investors too will pull out. And, although I'm sure even investors are aware, so they always maybe show
empathy or something.
They show them how they are. Like, what are the Like you said, a lot of them always have their own fraud detection team.
Yeah.
But they can't be operating in a silo. They need to talk to each other. That's what Voyance is trying to solve, right?
But my discussion with another fintech expert, he has also been, a recipient of the activities of these fraudsters. He has experienced it a lot. And he's like, doing this within the fintech community is actually nice, but the banks are usually involved in this too, because this is a scenario. Customer information gets stolen by a fraudster. The fraudster uses his ATM card to buy stuff online. The customer goes to report to the bank. Bank says, we apologize for the inconveniences. They will refund the money. Bank looks for the merchant. The merchant said, I've collected money now. I've given the person the product.
Yeah.
So the bank, to mitigate their own losses, they will now look for a payment switch that is responsible.
And push the responsibility.
Oh, God.
So MasterCard, Visa, the big guys, they can actually handle this sometimes when it happens. But for our local fintech companies, the Paystacks, the Flutterwaves, it's not going to be very, very convenient for them.
Mm.
So the banks actually need to be in this database too, because they have the data of thousands of people.
Defaulters.
So it requires the CBN to put political will behind this to get the banks to join. If not, I don't think the banks would.
Yeah, but I even discovered that there's an anti-fraud platform that the CBN and NIBS created a few years back. I think.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. That
the NIBS is like a conglomerate of all the banks.
All the banks, yes. Yeah. So, but it seems they're not even reporting these fraud cases on that platform. It's supposed to be a real-time fraud detection platform that the banks will be using to report these incidents, but they don't report.
There's a lot, and I think it's very important for Voyance, and all the startups that are on board with this to find a way to go together and, you know, talk to regulators, engage them in conversation and say, oh, this is what we've produced, you guys should
it's important having a database of that in a way would curb those people, the forgers and the fraudsters, from doing, because they know that they are not really covered.
Yeah.
Or in a way, get more creative.
Yeah, in my opinion, they will get more creative. Even if this comes to stop them for some time.
They will develop more ways at
least. Yeah, they always will. They always will. That one is a given.
Of course, but it will reduce it in a way. And it's like a shared responsibility now. It's not just one person. There's really strength in numbers.
Yeah.
There's strength in numbers.
All right, this has been fun. I'm so happy that we're back in our studio.
But
I'm also sad that next week we will not be in our studio. But seriously, guys, you guys listening, we'd really like to hear from you. Want to know what you think about everything we've talked about today. Ekiti State government. If you're from Ekiti State, shout out to us.
Will you be
moving to Ekiti State soon?
Yeah.
Of course, we're going to have to engage, Emmanuel, we have to engage a lot of these telcos and talk to them. I think that would be an interesting story idea for people to watch out. What do they think about this Ekiti thing? Would they be willing to? Somehow I wish it was Ibadan, to be honest. No offense to Ekiti people,
sentiment.
But you know, Ibadan is closer to Lagos.
Yes,
I wish it was Ibadan.
So,
you never know.
And well, Akure too is far a bit far from Lagos, but closer to Ekiti. So it's not just about the proximity to Lagos State.
Usually. I mean, proximity wouldn't have been a problem if there was like a functional railway system anyway.
True.
So, yes.
Anyway, that wouldn't. But yeah, I mean, I would like to see what the ISPs think of that. The main ones, the fiber ones, all of them. And then, guys, what the Ugandan government is doing, getting commercial motorcycles to onboard with ELN platforms. Something that Lagos should have done. What do you guys think about that? What do you think about Jumia and their numbers and their fintech pivots? What do you think about the fraud detection? What Voyance is trying to do? We really like to hear from you. Please email us podcast@techpoint.africa. And you can also tweet at us. Our Twitter handle is techpoint.ng. That's techpoint,
D-O-T-N-G.
You can also tweet it with the hashtag techpointafricapodcast. If you tweet that hashtag, we'll see your tweets and then we'll engage you. And yeah, we'd really like to hear from you. And don't forget, if you're listening for the first time, you can get this podcast wherever you get podcasts.
Yeah, you can get it on SoundCloud, you can get it on Stitcher, you can get it on Spotify. If you're not in Nigeria, you can get it on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, anywhere else you get your podcast.
Anywhere you get podcast. You can even get the RSS feed. You can go to podcast.techpoint.africa and, you know, click on any of those icons to get. Nifemi, do you have any parting words?
Parting words. I'm happy that we get to record this in the studio, and well, maybe that will keep us going for another. We don't have many weeks. We have to record from our homes
again.
In all, we want us to keep the strength on don't give up. This too will soon be over. Some economies are opening up. So we hope Nigeria will be the next.
Yes, we hope so. Thanks for those nice words, Nifemi. And we're apologizing in advance that for next week's episode, the audio quality.
Yeah.
We hope you'll still keep listening with us.
Yeah, personally, apologize too.
Don't forget to stay safe, please. Stay safe. If you have to step out, if you have to, try and make sure you social distance. If you don't have a car and you have to take public transport, try and make sure you social distance. So, if you don't have to, please just stay at home. Please stay at home. So, we'll catch you guys later. Have fun and take care. Bye.
Bye.